hopefully into the archives at Pacific. I take it and cut it up, you know, for whatever topics that I need. So a number of questions for you. Start with World War II. Were you in the, geez Louise, there's my questions. Were you in the Army Specialized Training Program?
I was.
Were you with Rich and Ed?
I was not.
Okay.
It was a nationwide program.
Okay.
I was not, but I was a part of it, and I did my ASTP at Loyola University in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And then I went overseas with the Third Army with General Patton's organization.
Okay. So about the same time that they did as
yes.
well, it sounds like. So enough World War II. Let's move beyond that. When did you first start working with, hanging out with Mark Hatfield?
Well, when we were building the store in Salem, my friends in Portland said, there's somebody in Salem who you should get to know. And he is a professor at Willamette. His name is Mark Hatfield.
Mm-hmm.
And how the first meeting went, the Oregonian did a feature on the most eligible bachelors in Oregon. And Mark was one of them, and I was one of them. And the photographer suggested that we meet at my house so he could get a picture of both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, and did get the picture. And that's how I first met Mark. And he was a great sidewalk superintendent. He would go by watching the progress of the store and was very much interested in the features of the store, and that was in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
About that time, he was interested in running for statewide office, and I work with him on Secretary of State, and,
mm-hmm.
and then his campaigns for governor and U.S. Senator, most of which I chaired.
Yeah, yeah. Now, did you work for him as governor, or was your first staff
during his time as governor? He appointed me the chair of the Oregon Economic Development Department.
Okay.
And I chaired that commission of some very high-powered people around the state.
Mm-hmm.
We had great success in creating 186,000 new jobs, and but I continued with my own business and running
mm-hmm.
Mar and Frank. Then in 1965, when Mar and Frank was sold, a disaster,
mm-hmm.
to the May Company, which my family did not want, but the Meyer family did,
mm-hmm.
I left the store, and Mark asked me to come back to Washington because he had just been elected
mm-hmm.
senator,
mm-hmm.
and I went back for his first term as a dollar-a-year man,
uh-huh.
and then became his chief of staff.
Yeah.
And I left in 1992.
Okay. So virtually the whole time that he
yeah.
was there. Yeah. When he was governor, and you're doing economic development and, you know, keeping an eye on things, did you run into the young Vic Atiyah, who was newly elected in 58?
Yes, I did. Of course, I knew the Atiyah family, having been in the retail
mm-hmm.
business. We sold rugs, too, and
yeah,
I knew
yeah.
the very fine organization that was Tia Brothers. Then I also ran across Vic with the Boy Scouts.
Oh, okay.
That I chaired the Cascade Area Council at one time and worked closely with Vic on various scouting programs. He was a devoted Boy Scout, mm-hmm. very supportive of the activities, so I did get to know him that way also.
Okay. Did you get any Silver Beaver Awards or anything like that?
I did.
Okay, good. I was just chasing that down because Vic remembered the Silver Beaver, and then going through the documents, it's like he also got the Silver Antelope for the regional things.
Yeah.
He said that was a much rarer thing, and it is. It's a much rarer thing. Yeah. So when Vic was first in office and Hatfield was basically first there as well as governor, there was a group of the young legislators,
Turks.
The Young Turks, and they eventually made Mark an honorary member. We actually have the plaque that has all that. Were you aware of that group?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I knew practically all of them.
Uh-huh.
They were a very bright, motivated, positive group of people who were on the right track for good things for Oregon, something that we are missing tragically today.
Mm-hmm. What was it that brought them together? Was it business background? Was it enthusiasm? Was it age?
Love of state.
Love of state really drew them all together. Okay, that's wonderful. Vic runs for governor in 74, then again in 78. Were you paying attention to those races other than being on, you know, in
Oh, of
Hatfield's
course.
Office
and we watched very carefully. We didn't get involved in them,
mm-hmm.
but we watched it very carefully, and of course, Mark was very fond of Vic
mm-hmm.
and supported him strongly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When Vic wins election, one of the first big things he has to face and then voluntarily faces is Northwest Energy. So there was the issues of the nuclear power plants, but most importantly, putting together the Northwest Power Planning Council, which is a cooperative effort with all you in Washington.
And
getting the
existence.
States
yes.
to work things here. What do you remember about that process?
Well, I remember that we were very much interested in it. We felt it was a very positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
We supported what Vic was doing. And as an anecdote, the two people who were running it, staff people, Mark Walker and Steve, I'll tell you in a minute, are former staff members.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So how much did you guys get involved in D.C. in getting the states to work together? The way I've heard it is the congressional delegations, especially the staffers, were really on board. They knew each other.
Very much so.
But there were problems with Governor Spellman in Washington. Were you involved in negotiating with him or working with
no,
the Washington
No, other
delegation?
Staff people were.
Okay.
I was not personally involved with that.
Okay, okay. Another thing that comes up later on is the Columbia Gorge Scenic Area. And it's been described to me as the process, I mean, it was a hard process, but it was a process that was made a little easier because a lot of the same people had been involved doing the Northwest Power Planning negotiations were there.
But the real
to go on
impetus
to.
There was Nancy Russell.
Right, right.
And we worked very closely with her.
Yeah.
Her husband was a schoolmate of mine, and I knew Nancy very well, and she was a very persistent individual.
Mm-hmm. Now, was she the champion of that idea? Did she generate the idea?
She
was the champion of it.
Yes.
Looking at it, I mean, this is one of Senator Hatfield's big things that he was pushing on. What was the other rest of the Oregon delegation doing with that, or was it just?
Well, they were supportive, but Mark took the leadership.
Mark took the leadership on it. Okay. And in terms of coordinating, how much were you coordinating back with Governor Atiyah's office? Or were you basically saying, we've got to do the D.C. part and you've got to do this part?
Our staff people were very much involved with the Atiyah people.
Okay. Putting that all together. Okay. Towards the end of Atiyah's time in office, 84, 85, 86, there's the first effort of doing something about Opal Creek. And it's all tied up in the fact that Vic's in-laws owned Opal Creek. So he was getting pressure from one of his nephews. It's been described by staffers that Vic wasn't lying, but Vic was probably telling different things to different people as he was torn in all of this. Were you involved talking about Opal Creek that early?
Our staff people were involved.
Uh-huh.
I personally was not. My job as chief of staff was the direction our people, what they were doing.
Right.
I did not get involved in the details of it. I didn't have the time, and I didn't feel that was my job.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it comes together 10 years later.
You're right.
As Hatfield is leaving office. So, in Vic's time in office, he's elected in 78, so 79 to 87. And it's been described as the first 6 months of 79, Oregon's budget was as strong as it ever had been. They gave back a lot of money. They were really worried about Proposition 13, the property tax things that it passed in California. There were measures in Oregon and things like that. And then by about September, Paul Volcker raised interest rates. And by the end of 79, interest rates had gone up 40%. And so Vic, from then and basically till the end of his term, had to govern in this economic disaster area. One of the big things is the collapse of the timber industry during that time, from its preeminent role to its much smaller role. And one of the things that's been described to me is that it was hard for the state people to talk to the Reagan people who were running the national forests, you know, the BLM Forest Service, that kind of thing. Was your office involved in trying to get that conversation to happen?
Very much so.
Uh-huh.
Mark was very knowledgeable, very supportive,
mm-hmm.
and yes, we were. It could not have been done without our office and Mark's mm-hmm. personal involvement.
Mm-hmm. And did you find other members of the delegation playing a role, or was this another time when Mark was the lead player?
Mark was the lead.
Was the lead player, okay. It's fascinating to me because as I'm doing this book, memories are memories. And so it's my job to get the memories and then figure out, okay, when did that actually happen? But so many people see that 82 collapse of the timber industry and they say it was the spotted owl. But the spotted owl is not until 3 years later. So it's one of the really fascinating thing to really explore and look at. Another big thing that happened during the Reagan years, Reagan was cutting back on the federal payments, block grants and things like that, just as the states across the country were in this huge economic downturn. And to put it mildly, this ticked Vic off. Was your office involved in trying to get David Stockman to see the light or anything like
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Personally involved.
Uh-huh.
The name of the other party with the Northwest Planning Council is Steve Crow.
Steve Crow.
C-R-O-W.
Right. So what did you do? What personal involvement with the Reagan administration trying to get the federalism ideas changed.
Mark was spending hours, days with David Stockman and others on this score.
Okay.
And I think it's fair to say in all of this that Vic Atiyah was far more appreciated later for what he did than during the time that he was not an attention getter.
Mm-hmm.
And there were many other things that were going on where he was certainly a valuable source, but he was not somebody on the front scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was only later, as he grew older, and some who succeeded him were not as strong as they might be,
mm-hmm.
and people then began to appreciate what a smart, quality, forceful, forward-looking person Vic was.
Yeah, yeah. And he also began, as you implied there, he also began to actually come out and say, we did this.
Right.
A working title for the book right now is something that Vic told me, and I had to track down who it was because he wouldn't tell me. Jill Thorne on Neil Goldschmidt's staff, about 6 months after Neil had taken office, saw Vic and said to him, this job is a lot tougher than you made it look.
It was a very sad thing that the relationship between Neil and Vic was, at the end, was a very unpleasant one.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't want to be anywhere where Neil was.
Yeah, absolutely.
And being a close friend of both of them, I found that extremely difficult.
Yeah, yeah. And it was fraught a lot of, I mean, from when Neil was the mayor of Portland, they just had, you know, they butted heads on so many things.
There was no love lost.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. In terms of a chapter, actually, that I'm just finishing up right now is the Rajneeshis. And the Vic side of it has never, ever been told.
Which issue?
The Rajneeshis.
Oh.
The cult. And the key to that is Jerry Thompson, who has the boxes. So I think I have enough leverage to get them from her now. But in the research that I've done, Senator Hatfield wrote a letter to the Immigration and Naturalization Service in May of 1982 asking them to specifically really look into the Rajneeshis, look at their bank accounts, all that kind of stuff. Do you remember where that came from?
Where the impetus came
from? Yeah, where the impetus came from.
Or it came from the senator himself.
Okay.
He was very concerned
mm-hmm.
about that, felt it was very dangerous, and they hated him,
mm-hmm.
and they did all kinds of things during that period as far as Mark was concerned, in nasty remarks, threats.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very unpleasant relationship.
Mm-hmm. And as you watched that develop, do you think that that letter from Senator Hatfield got the immigration and naturalization people and the IRS to do things more, or were they already kind of doing things anyway?
I have no way of knowing.
No way of knowing, yeah. The public record versus what was really happening. How do you reconcile that? During the time that Vic was governor and then about the decade before that, Oregon became known for innovative bills, the bottle bill, the beach bill, those kinds of things. The land use legislation becomes fascinating because there's a series of hearings about whether or not there should be national land use legislation in the basically early to mid-70s. Do you remember that?
Well, yes, I remember that because mm-hmm. we were involved with that.
Uh-huh.
And many of the things that you mentioned there were things that, Tom McCall mm-hmm. was involved in, and he was a great publicity seeker
mm-hmm.
and was very different from Vic, who let the deeds speak for themselves. Tom wanted to take the credit for it.
Yeah.
So there was a very different feeling
yeah.
between all three of them, between Vic, Mark, and Tom,
mm-hmm.
and the relationship between Tom and Mark was a very interesting one, because on the surface it was always a congenial one. Underneath the surface, they couldn't stand each other.
Mm-hmm.
Vic was, or Tom was very jealous of Mark, and Mark was very upset because Tom would say one thing publicly and something else privately.
Right. Talking to some staffers, they had the same problem with him. That's fascinating to me, because when you look back in history, there's kind of, we have the three big liberal moderate Republicans. So we've got Mark, more of the moderate side, Packwood, I think you can say liberal, and McCall, liberal. And now we're putting, I'm going to try to put Atiyah, so people mention him in there as well, more of the moderate, leaning to conservative than those. For Republicans now, they're all way off to the side. You know,
yeah.
Mark said when he retired,
yeah.
he wouldn't be able to win a primary,
no.
and Vic wouldn't be able to win a primary at all
right.
these days. I found out that when Vic was first elected to the House, Tom McCall, who lived just up the hill, was a frequent visitor, coming over for dinner.
A frequent visitor?
To come over to the Atiyah house and have dinner.
Really?
Yeah. And then later, they develop a relationship that sounds much like the one between Mark and Tom.
Right.
The one between Vic and Tom had the same sets of weird dynamics going on.
You might go back to when Dolores and Vic were in the governor's office. They lived in a very modest home, and I can remember being invited there many times
mm-hmm.
for one thing or another, and being appalled at what the state of Oregon was doing for our governor. And later on, when let's see what year it was, when Neil became governor,
mm-hmm.
he then asked me and the late Don Frisbee to raise funds for our governor's home, which we did.
Yeah.
And I did that because I was, again, so appalled at the way the Atiyah family and Mark,
yeah,
the quarters that they lived in.
Yeah, yeah. A funny story, because Dolores was she was on her own to be the hostess there. She would like bring in the daughters of friends to help out, kind of thing. But shortly after they moved in there, because it had been repainted and the carpet had been refurbished and things, someone came in and said, "Oh, is the carpet from Atiyah Brothers?" And Dolores said, "Oh no, the state could never afford that." Just classic. She was so happy to get home after
yeah.
8 years. So happy. Tell me more about the land use idea at the national level. It doesn't eventually take off, but this is a unique period in time when we've just now got fresh the EPA and all these kind of Nixon era environmental things are coming through. Do you think that the national land use idea had a chance at the time, or was it more
of a... It didn't have a chance without Mark Hatfield.
Okay. So he's got as far as it did because he was there pushing it. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. We've talked about it a little bit so far. I'd like to hear your impressions of the management styles of the different governors.
Tom McCall was greatly aided by a very good staff.
Uh-huh.
And he himself was not a good manager.
Yeah.
Vic was a good manager, and the folks who he selected were able to follow through because of his direction.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Hatfield did not like details, was not interested in the day-to-day operation of the office, was mainly concerned with projects and programs, and he never hired or fired anybody in his life. That was my job, and I'm not bragging about it, but during his first term, when I was not as chief of staff, the office was in great disarray, and it was my job to bring it back with my own type of management, which he gave me full control to do,
mm-hmm.
in which my prior experience in managing Warren Frank came in very happily. I was a very detailed manager. Mark was anything but.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see anything like, you know, any observations on Bob Straub or Neil or Barbara?
Bob Straub was a very good businessman. Had a very poor staff,
mm-hmm.
which was difficult for him. The black lady, not black in color, but who has become the black lady who was...
Oh, Patricia? McPain.
Patricia.
Yeah.
Was a bitch.
Uh-huh.
And she put up a wall between the public and Barbara Roberts.
Right.
I have no respect for her. Neil was an incredible case, an absolutely brilliant mind, very forward thinking,
mm-hmm.
An idea, not a minute, but a second. Extremely difficult to work with because he would have all of these conceptual ideas and then leave it to staff to follow up. And if it hadn't been for Tom Imeson,
mm-hmm.
who you can't say enough good things about, Neil's time would have been very different.
Yeah, I interviewed Dan Simmons, who was running all sorts of state things at that point, and he said oftentimes he would be the only one saying, so this is what I'm hearing that you want us to do in those meetings with Neil, because it's just hard to coalesce. How do you get this to an action?
Very difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Fascinating. Fascinating. Vic deals with it a lot through his governorship of ideas for tax reform, just as every governor seems to deal with it, and he had about as much luck with it as every other governor. But eventually, by the time he gets to about 1985, he says, okay, so real tax reform is going to involve a sales tax as part of a package with this, that, or the other. What did you see with those tax ideas? I mean, Hatfield had, you know, reforming tax ideas. Everybody's had reforming tax ideas. I talked to Tony Van Vliet, and he said, you know, when you look at Vicks, Barbara's, and who else did he have in there? I think John gave it a shot. But, you know, basically, I wrote the original plan. They're just using the same plan. But what did you see when you were looking at those tax reform ideas and the political reality of them?
Well, the essence was that what was being proposed was no different, basically, than what had been successful in other states.
Yeah.
And there was no reason in the world why Oregon should be any different. Mm-hmm. The problem was that the politicians were so afraid of the union influence that they didn't accept the sales tax proposals, when in truth, I was around the state a great deal, and in talking with the audiences, when you would talk about the tax situation, and when you would explain what a sales tax would do, that it would eliminate medicine and food and other things, and that it couldn't be, the rate couldn't be raised without a vote of the people, and where the leadership would be strong, didn't have to be a politician, it could be strong, a strong person in the business sector. When all these factors were considered, most people would accept a sales tax, but that never came about.
Yeah.
Because the unions had the politicians tied around their finger.
Yeah. It's fascinating. At the time, it was slightly before Vic became governor, and then in the early parts, how the political parties in Oregon would switch.
Yeah.
Republicans are in favor of it, then they're against it. Democrats against. Wally Carson talks about being in the Senate and going to meet some colleagues in Washington State, where at that point the parties were exactly the opposite on income tax and sales tax. And Wally said, I never knew the waters of the Columbia were so powerful.
Yeah.
To change it. You bring up an interesting thing. You know, a lot of other states have done this successfully. What sense did you get about Oregon politicians paying attention to what was going on in the rest of the country? We're leading the country in things like beach bill, bottle bill, land use. But then there's things like taxes where other states clearly have a more successful system.
Mark was not interested. Tom McCall didn't understand it. Barbara Roberts didn't either. Neil did. But he was so involved with so many other things that he, it was not the time. Bob Straub probably understood it better than anybody.
Yeah.
But didn't have the staff to bring it about.
To bring it about, yeah. Looking at people like Bob Straub and Vic, very different governorships, but they both have that strong business sense.
No question.
And you come from that background as well. A lot of people now, well, they've done it for 30 years, talk about we need to run government like a business. And Vic discovered you can't run government like a business, but a business understanding of budgets and things like that is an amazing thing. Did you see Bob Straub use that business side of him when he was being governor?
Well, he tried to, but it's impossible for the number one person to do it by himself. He's got to have people around him.
So the staff just didn't work.
And Straub had as poor a staff as I can yeah. remember, for anybody.
Yeah.
So it was not conceivable for him to do it.
Yeah.
Which is very sad. I love Bob Straub. He was a wonderful man. Mm-hmm. And he was very smart, good businessman. But he was not well served by the people around him, and his speech impediment was a real problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this brings up another issue, picking staff. You've been involved in picking staff. You were picked by Mark. Transitions into governorship. So Vic had Travis Cross and Lynn Newbery as his people doing that. How much of that picking staff is the newly elected person, and how much of it is the transition team, in your experience?
Oh, it's practically all the individual.
Okay.
It's not the transition.
Okay.
There has to be a chemistry.
Yeah.
Between the staffer and the office holder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really a very important decision.
Yeah, it's a very important decision.
And when people come in, they all troop in and out of this office. Those who have run or are thinking about running, and I say to all of them, I said, you have to have two things. You got to have a strong financial base, or you're going to get into trouble. And secondly, you've got to pick somebody at your side who you thoroughly trust and who trusts you and understands you. Mm-hmm. So that person can,
yeah.
can go ahead
yeah.
and do things. Jerry?
Pause you here.
I'm sure you see all the pictures of the people.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's really fun, really really fun. One thing I've discovered in all this, because Vic gave all his stuff to Pacific University, boy, you guys get a lot of plaques and things. And I then went and was checking things out at the Washington County Historical Society had anything on Vic, and the main things I have is he gave them like 150 plaques. Some of which told me things that I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
So that's it's important that I look at all of them. But it's just amazing. Just amazing. So, did you watch the Lee Johnson-Vic saga the first 2 years of his governorship?
Well, I watched it from a distance because
yeah.
Lee was a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
So, yes, I did watch it. I didn't become involved in it, but I thought it was a fascinating diversion.
Yeah. How quickly did you get a sense that it wasn't really going to work out?
Very quickly.
Very quickly? Okay.
They were very different human beings.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That was just amazing. And I was never able to peg Vic down. I mean, his first choice was always Jerry. His second choice was Lynn Newbery. And both of them would have been just fantastic. But Lee is somewhere down here. So it's just fascinating. So what happened to those interim people?
Yeah.
Who did you go through? And we'll probably never know that. But
the personalities were so different.
Yeah.
Jerry was a good administrator. She was a strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
And continues to be.
And continues to be, yeah.
I like her a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about personalities. And Vic hired her. He also hired his 1978 campaign manager, Carol Whitney. They, to this day, really don't know why they were hired. Because Vic, he trusted his gut for, I'm going to win the election, I'll win the election. But when he felt that it gelled with a person, he just, boom, it was there. And a mystery if you're on the other side of it.
But you can go through the list of governors, of House of Representatives, members, U.S. senators, and you could the connection between the strength of the administrator in each case is so strong that you can see from who it was whether or not that person was going to be successful. It was the key ingredient.
Key ingredient. That's good. So any last things about Vic as governor?
Yeah. As we said before, that here is a man who is much more appreciated after than during. Mm-hmm. And if I were writing the book, that's an area that I would emphasize.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because it's very fascinating.
It's absolutely, yeah. It's funny to learn that at Dorchester they would do skits based on that.
Yeah.
We can't win the governorship, so what do we do when they do things and there'd be Vic sitting in a chair?
Yep.
That kind of thing. One last, it just occurred to me as we're talking about that importance. After Vic lost in 74 to Straub, and he lost by a lot, it's the worst defeat for a governor candidate since 1950. But he was thrilled. He had met people. I found out from his son that he had a Watergate discount. So I lost by a lot, but actually I didn't lose by as much because Watergate, you know, drove it, which is probably absolutely accurate. But at that point, he stepped into a real leadership role statewide in the Republican Party. You know, he was bringing Reagan here and Ford here and all that.
But, my friend, the Republican Party then was very different.
Yeah.
Than it was in succeeding years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Walter Huss is beginning to show up as kind of a delegate.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really discuss the Republican Party in terms of what it was, what it became, and what it is.
Okay.
It's totally different.
Yeah. At the time, did you get a sense that Vic was playing this kind of statewide leadership role in the party?
No.
Okay. Because it shows up, and yet in 78, when he runs again, people are looking at it as McCall's race whenever the heck he gets in, and Vic is kind of seen as a third.
Yeah.
So it's just fascinating.
Very different.
Very, very different. Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Is that the kind of thing you want?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got anything else you want to say? Go for it.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, this is wonderful.
Very pertinent questions.
Thank you very much.
They're the...